7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. I guess at least we should say as of right now, starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Who knows what could happen over the next 48 hours or so. But of course, we're here to break this one down for you. Over the next hour, we are sponsored by Prize Picks. And I will tell you, I was over at Prize Picks a little earlier. Death taxes, KHK win by decision, Pete. I'm already going to tell you, a little teaser out there, that significant strike prop on Caleb Trukagian is too low. I'm just throwing this out there right now. You might as well go to Prize Picks right now if you're in a state that can play Prize Picks. I know, Pete, you're not in a state that you can do that. But if you are, I'm just telling you, we'll talk about it later. But I'm smashing that over on Caleb Trukagian. But, of course, as always, I'm joined by the fighter, Pete Rogers Jr. Good afternoon, Pete. How you doing, brother?
What's up, man? How are you? Small card, late start time. Two things I hate about the UFC cards. I wish I like earlier fights and I like the big cards. So hopefully we don't lose anything for the weigh-ins, but quite the different card, in comparison to the last week's card with a ton of different fights, ton of different underdogs. I'm interested to see where you lie on some of these matchups.
What, old man, you can't stay up past 10 o'clock at night?
No, it's not that. I mean, like I don't have to be watching all the fights while I'm at work. Like I want to watch them beforehand. And like
I get you.
7:30 start for prelims. Like, my goodness, gonna drag it out. It's too late.
True story. Last weekend I was watching the UFC pay-per-view from my hotel room. And I passed out during OSP and Shogun. That's understandable though.
I was literally just gonna call you out on that. But I thought that you for sure passed out in that co-main event. But the OSP Shogun Hua fight was pretty horrible as well. So it was just a weird night.
I'll tell you what, talk about last week. I thought one of the biggest takeaways in the fight I really enjoyed was the Chaos Williams and Randy Brown matchup. The adjustments that Randy Brown made after the first round. I mean, both those guys took some amazing shots. I love the corner work from Chaos Williams after the second round, where they basically just say, do you want to go win this fight or what?
Yeah,
I feel like that coach should have been in the corner, Rose Namajunas.
Yeah, right. I mean, or Trevor Whitman just should have had more of a voice in that corner. But I don't know if anything could have really made Rose fight a different game plan. I do think that the first defeat to Carla Esparza was in the back of her head, and she fought super safe, just enough to win rounds. And it was just a weird situation. But the Chaos Williams, Randy Brown. Randy Brown looked better as the fight went on. Rounds two and rounds three looked really good. Still got hit with some big shots and got dropped, but he definitely showed up for that matchup, and he looked good in an underdog spot.
Literally, you text me as I'm have a drink in hand that Cerrone and Lozano is off, and I won't say the word that I typed to you because we try to keep it family friendly here, but I was like, son of a, mm-hmm. I was like, well, they went half my lineups.
Yeah, I had 58%. So, and I still ended up not for betting. I did great, but for DFS, I ended up almost breaking even. So with 58% of your lineups done before lock, it was pretty good to basically recoup some of my money.
Yeah. I mean, of course, those two underdogs last week that came in, Macy Chiasson scoring 106 points, CJ Vergara scoring 83 points. You had those two together. You were going to cash some lineups there. And of course, Lupe Godinez was the slate breaker of 129 points. And just the stats on that one, 8 takedowns, a plus 127 strike differential, 13 minutes of control time. I spoke to her earlier this week on my podcast.
She's
and
nasty, bro.
She admitted to me, she thought that Carlosi was going to be a little stronger than what she was. But man, she went out there just a dominating performance, what she's able to do there. But of course, we're here to break down UFC Vegas 54, going to be headlined by a light heavyweight matchup. You got the former champion Jan Błachowicz taking on the rising fighter and Alexander Rakic. 8,700 for Rakic, 7,500 for Jan Błachowicz. Of course, this was a fight that was supposed to take place back in March at the Columbus show, now moved back here due to Jan Błachowicz needing some more time to recover from an injury here. This is one of the ones, and if you checked out our video over Odd Shopper, I think you kind of know our thoughts on this one. But, I think that in terms from a GPP aspect, I don't really love this main event in terms of GPPs. I think I do like Rakic to win this fight. I just think that, he's catching Jan Błachowicz at the right time. But I do think that if we are going to be backers in GPPs of Alexander Rakic, we're going to be sweating this one out. I do have a little bit of a concern on the price point.
Yeah, I mean it's a main event where I feel like this could be an underwhelming performance for either one. It could be more of a methodical type of fight, slower pace in a slower pace fight with, you know, their ground games somewhat canceling each other out at times. So I do think that either one of these fighters can take their opponents to the mat, but I don't know if they can really hold them there. I don't know if they can get, you know, land multiple takedowns. You know, I think that this is a possible buy low situation where Jan Blachowicz prices 7,500 for being the former champ. You're talking about value. Yeah, for sure. He's going to be popular because it's a 5-round bout. And if it's a competitive fight, as we think it's going to be, a sweat, then, you know, why not take some shots on Jan Blachowicz and have him a part of your lineups? But with all that being said, I do like the youth, the athleticism of Alexander Rakic. I like that he can land takedowns as well. And I like the, he has power similar to Jan Blachowicz. So I just think that he might be the better fighter in this situation. This is a step up in competition, though, going from Thiago Santos and Anthony Smith, two solid wins, but low volume wins. And in an Anthony Smith fight, you know, you definitely saw that he's ready to take on some of these top contenders. But the fight before that, he'd lost a split decision to Volkan Ozdemir. So if Volkan can create a game plan and go out there and beat Alexander Rakic, can Jan Blachowicz? And that's why I think everybody's going to be, you know, targeting Jan Blachowicz. But with all that being said, I do like Alexander Rakic. I don't necessarily like the price point of how I think that this pacing is going to go, and also of how close I think that this fight's going to be. I kind of thought that this would be like that 83, 8,400 range for Rakic, and that would have made a little bit more sense. So I'm still favoring Rakic in the bout. But with that being said, I'll be split exposure and maybe even capping some of my exposure because I feel like it could just be a dud as far as like GPPs are considered.
Yeah, when we're talking general roster construction, my thought process, game theory for Saturday slate is there's two other fights on this card that I feel like we have to prioritize because of the fact of, I think, high volatility in both those matchups, where I just think that when we talk about what fights are going to be optimal, I will tell you, I think co-main event is one of those fights I think will be optimal. Another fight, and we'll talk about this fight later on, that I believe is going to be optimal, is the Frank Camacho and Manuel Torres matchup. Those two fights are going to be fights that I'm truly prioritizing on. But of course, before we get into that co-main event, be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that thumbs up, hit that notification bell so you know when a show is live here on the Awesomeo YouTube channel. Of course, if you're not also a Plus member, you want to get a little peek what's behind the paywall today. Today's free premium data and tools are MLB player rankings, NBA player projections, PGA player rankings, and NHL player rankings. I'll definitely be putting my NBA lineups together once this show is over. Last night was not a friendly night for me. I had way too much Golden State Warriors last night, so that could probably tell you why it was not necessarily the greatest night of me, is because that game was over in the third quarter. You know, man, did not see that one come. But if you did not watch the Bucks and Celtics game in that fourth quarter yesterday, man, that was an amazing game if you missed that one. But the co-main event, Ian Kutalaba and Ryan Spann. And I feel like both these guys, I think when we think about some of your thought process with both of them, by the way, the price point on this one, 8,900 for Ian Kutalaba, 7,300 for Ryan Spann. There was a time with both of these guys, I think, that you probably didn't really have a lot of faith in them. And if the fight got out of the first round, especially with Ian Kutalaba, he's shown that in his last two fights, going decisions in both of those. Ryan Spann pretty much has been a guy, he's a boom bust type guy. You know, he had that Sam Alvey fight that he won a decision in, but that was a very disappointing performance for him. You know, I guess the question is, cardio wise, who do you trust more?
I trust Kudalaba. I definitely trust Kudalaba a little bit more. I mean, that his output and pace is just pretty amazing for the division. He had some defensive flaws in his game, and I do think that he's starting to fight a little bit more methodical. The output and pace is something that I really want to get behind. So against Dustin Jacoby, he attempted 19 takedown attempts. He landed 9 of them. Previously against Devin Clark, he attempted 12 takedowns and landed 8 of them. So I really like that strategy, especially his price point, 8,900. Now, my one worry is how dangerous Ryan Spann is early on. He hits really hard. With all that being said, he also has a sneaky guillotine. And whenever somebody's shooting tons of takedowns over and over and over, if they get a little bit too excited and overextended, that's when a guillotine could definitely be snatched up. So I am going to have some some cheap plays with Ryan Spann at 7,300, but I am actually like going to be largely having some Kudalaba shares. Like I think that he has some of the best pound for pound value on the slate. If he goes out there and just survives that round one, he can knock out Ryan Spann. He could submit Ryan Spann. And I think he might even take him to Takedown City. So he has excellent ground and pound. And I just feel like he's the more well-rounded three round fighter. You know, like Ryan Spann looks awesome early on and then he really tapers off. So big guys, anything can happen in light heavyweight or heavyweight, but I like the price point of Ian Kutalaba, 8,900, and the stats back it up. He has a higher output and just the takedown potential. I mean, he's averaging 4 takedowns per 15 minutes. That is like music to my ears. Just survive the big right hand, survive the guillotine attempts, and just pass and constantly work and outwork Ryan Spann. And we could have ourselves a Colby Covington type of performance here.
You know, I feel like if you tell me this fight's going to hit the second round, I love Ian Kutalaba more. But I mean, obviously Ryan Spann is going to be dangerous. You know, in multi-entries, I want to take some shots here on Ryan Spann, but I do like Ian Kutalaba to win this matchup. Next up, we've got Davey Grant taking on Luis Smolka. Davey Grant, 9,100, 7,100 for Luis Smolka. Of course, Davey Grant comes in this fight with back-to-back losses, those losses against Chito Vera and Adrian Yanez. And on the other side, Luis Smolka coming in on a loss. Luis Smolka has always kind of been an up and down guy.
Yeah, he definitely has been. And he's been a fighter that I feel like a lot of players, including myself, were always intrigued to get some shares of Luis Smolka because of the pace of a 125 pounder now within this division. Sometimes you can outwork your opposition, attempting takedowns at a high rate. I mean, there have been fights where he's attempted 10 takedowns. That's going back some time against Chris Carriasso and Neil Siri. But like high takedown attempts is what I would recommend in a situation in a matchup against Davey Grant, especially when you just got, you know, knocked out pretty bad against Vince Morales. And he's coming from Team Oyama, which is like a strong, methodical camp working with good minds surrounding him. So it's like, all right, if I'm his coach, it's grapple at all costs. Let's test Davey Grant's cardio. Let's also test his defensive wrestling and grappling, and let's avoid getting hit with a big shot, because the longer that this fight plays out on the feet, the more I think Davey Grant knocks him out and knocks him out in pretty bad fashion. Because if Vince Morales knocks you out and hits you with one big shot with good follow-up shots, what I've seen from Davey Grant in a war against Adrian Yanez, in a competitive bout against Marlon Vera, and then not even taking into account his two knockouts prior to that against Martin Day and Jonathan Martinez, I never saw Davey Grant being a guy that is still in the UFC in 2022, truthfully. But the power that he has is something that I think we have to respect. So this is a nice matchup for him at 9,100. I like him to win by KO. I definitely do. I think that if this stays up and he can defend a takedown, Luis Smolka is going to get hit and dropped. And Smolka has been dropped numerous times throughout his career. So that is a definite path to victory. And we could have a nice round one KO for Davey Grant. So I'll be sprinkling just a few Luis Smolka lineups in case he does go to that wrestling game plan, as I would recommend. But it's Davey Grant for me.
Yeah, and of course, he got dropped in his last fight there against Vince Morales, where he got stopped in the first round. And a little teaser for you. The fight time in this matchup is another prop bet that I do like over Prize Picks. We'll talk about that later on in the show. Then we got a female matchup, Kaitlyn Chookagian taking on Amanda Hibas. Kaitlyn Chookagian, she is 8,600, 7,600 for Amanda Hibas. Look, I said on Odd Shopper, I said earlier in the show, death, taxes, and Kaitlyn Chookagian win by decision. I mean, it's you feel pretty good about it. I mean, look, it's an interesting move to me of Hibas moving up in this match. I mean, one thing is, I mean, when I think of Kaitlyn Chookagian, I think of a fighter that's going to throw a ton of significant strikes, but she does have a very good jiu-jitsu game. You just don't see it a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that Chookagian via decision is like, it goes in that category of somewhat safe bet, because if history repeats itself, then, you know, this could be a similar situation, because Amanda Hibas is a competent fighter. Like she's good. I don't think that her chin is all that great, to be honest, especially when we saw Verna Janaroba test that chin and hurt her. And then prior to that, Marina Rodriguez knocking her out. So I do think that moving up a weight class might actually hurt her And because you're going up against Caitlin Chookagian, one of the biggest fighters for the division, one of the longest, she's going to look like it, you're truly going to be able to tell the size discrepancy here when they face off. So I'm backing Chookagian pretty heavily. I like the price tag, and I know that usually we don't like getting to Caitlin Chookagian part of DFS because it's like, yeah, you know, pencil her in 65, 75 points. I do think that there is some upside here. She could knock down Amanda Ribas. We have seen her get rocked, as I mentioned, but I think that the takedowns are tricky here as well, because Caitlin Chookagian, she'll probably be the stronger fighter of the two. And I do think she has a sneaky ground game, not necessarily like a superior jiu-jitsu game to Amanda Ribas, but I do think that she's the better wrestler. So I think that she could put together a complete performance, and at 8,600, you don't need a lot, especially if this looks like a low scoring slate. I'm going to get to Caitlin Chookagian quite a bit, to be honest. And I'm fine with it. If she was in the 9,000s, I probably would say no, but I feel comfortable with her getting a win. And sometimes, you know, DFS scores surprise you. So this could be one of those weeks. So I'm going to be over the field on Caitlin Chookagian, despite how everybody's got a little hesitant.
Look, I like Caitlin Chookagian to win this fight, Pete.
Yeah.
But you know, I do have DFS theory on her, right?
What's that?
Friends don't let friends. Let them put Caitlin Chookagian in their GPP lines.
Well, I hope nobody plays her, because I'm going to play her. So
I'm just going to hope
that she has a high volume fight, mixes in some takedowns, maybe even knocks down Amanda Ribas. Watch her get her first finish in a very long time. I will laugh.
Oh, March 19th, 2016.
Hey, that's okay. I mean, it's not like a likely outcome, but it's still possible, especially somebody who's chinny.
It could very well be a leverage play. I totally get you on that. And by the way, when we did our Odd Shopper video, Chookagian via decision was plus 130. Money's already coming in on that line. It's now plus 110. I mean, look, plus 450, Chookagian wins by TKO KO.
I'm saying, for a fighter who's so known to go the distance, I saw her KO prop and I said, Vegas doesn't trust Hibas's chin. And that's why I'm going to use Chookagian as a leverage play, because
it has to be one of the better TKO props for Chookagian in a long time.
Yeah. And it reminds me of a couple weeks ago. What was his name? I will remember who I'm thinking of. And it's a Christoph Jocko, same fighter, always goes the distance. His KO prop was, I think, at a pretty similar, it might've even been better than that. Might've been like plus 300 or something like that, which was kind of odd considering he's so notorious for going the distance.
My co-host on my podcast, he said, he goes, could you imagine if Chookagian and Jocko were on the same fight card and you just did a two fighter parlay of both them to win the decision?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's super safe money. I mean, if you put them both via KO and parlay the props, you probably make 10 grand off for dollar bet. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a likely outcome, but I'm going to be using her as a leverage play for sure.
Yeah, I would much rather potentially get her in cash, but I do understand where you're coming from of getting Turk as potentially a leverage play. Of course, get all the access, all the great Awesomeo Plus tools and content for nearly every DFF sport out there with an Awesomeo Plus weekly pass. Of course, this gives you full access to everything we got going on over at Awesomeo.com, including player projections, ownership projections, lineup builder, so much more, including that top fire tool, which is a tool I use every time when I'm developing my MMA lineups. Of course, if you're just looking for MMA DFS pass, you can sign up for Awesomeo Plus MMA weekly pass. Those start as low as $2.95 weekly. Of course, Fantasy Cruncher is an add-on. It can easily be added to with these packages at checkout, but not including our base package. Just stop guessing. Start winning. Join Awesomeo Plus today. Of course, that top fire tool is key for me. And of course, you know, I do the NASCAR shows here. That top driver tool is really key for me as I'm developing my lineups and figuring out how maybe I want to get a little bit different from the field. You know, I mentioned earlier, there are two fights on this card that I believe you have to hit on to be optimal. That other one is Frank Camacho, as he is going to be taking on Manuel Torres. Frank Camacho, first fight in over 2 years. His last matchup, he had to pull out because he was involved in a car accident. I actually talked to Frank about 2 weeks ago. You know, I asked him about the, you know, the injury sustained that car accident. He said, he goes, luckily, he goes, you know, banged up my shoulder, but overall, you know, walked out of it fairly safely. He's 7,900 here, 8,300 for Torres. I mean, obviously there is a massive difference when we're talking about experience between these two guys, but when I think of Frank Camacho, and this is why I believe that this is a fight that we have to have some priority on, is the fact of he can be a wild man in there, and he's going to throw some leather, but also there are going to be openings for his opponent to potentially take advantage of.
Yeah, I'm really torn on this fight, to be honest. And I'm going to, you know, in a little bit defer to you just because I want some insight for Frank. Like, it's just a tricky situation because, you know, Frank brings it. And then, you know, he also leaves himself open so much where a talented striker or a talented fighter can take advantage of it. And I don't think that Justin James fits that bill, but Justin James kind of came out hot where, you know, Frank Camacho was coming out a little lethargic at times before the fight even started. It was over. So, you know, 7,900, 8,300. This to me seems like a sneaky GPP fight, as we mentioned, like pretty similar to that 8,200, 8,000 fight where they tend to make it into the optimal lineup because it allows a ton of roster flexibility. That's the case here. But this seems also like a volatile, somebody's getting knocked out type of fight, or it's going to be a high, high volume fight on the feet. So I'm actually going to favor Manuel Torres. And it's just because, like, I don't know. I think that I'm just going to favor the fighter that obviously hasn't faced the tougher competition, which is usually the opposite of what I do, because I like, you know, backing the vets, the guys that have faced top competition. They've had to deal with adversity. There just seems to be with Frank Camacho, I have like this bad feeling about like backing him heavily here. So it will be a split exposure fight for me, but Manuel Torres, a guy with zero on his box score because he hasn't debuted in the UFC yet, could be flying under the radar a little bit against a guy who has been in wars and with the correct game plan could actually be a slate breaker. So I'm going to be picking Manuel Torres from everything I've seen. And I don't really put a lot of stock into that performance on Dana White's Contender Series either. Like, that was just a weird situation, but I'm going to favor Manuel Torres in this matchup. And hopefully you can give us, you know, some insight with Frank Camacho, see how he's doing, how he's feeling, all that good stuff.
And typically you're a guy that doesn't really love backing fighters coming off the Contender Series in their UFC debut. So when I talked to Frank about 2 weeks ago, you know, I asked him about the structure of his camp because he does split his time between his home in Guam and in California, Team Oyama. So he spent about the past 3 or 4 weeks at Team Oyama, and basically Colin Oyama and Alex Perez are the one who handle his camp. When he's in Guam, he's in constant communication with Alex about what he's doing, how they're preparing for a fight. So he's been there, you know, talking to Frankie, he seems to be in great spirits, you know, but it's a volatile fight. I think no question about it, because there are openings that he puts in there. I mean, this is one of those things. I think that you have to be split exposure. If you say you're playing a single entry and I go one way or the other, I would still side with Frank because of the veteran and the fact that he's just been in there with tougher competition. But I think this is a lineup. If you sit there and said, hey, you're going to play 20 lineups, you know, just you're playing at 20 max, I probably want to get to about 30% on each side of this one.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And if you look at Manuel Torres, his two defeats are both via leg lock. So if Frank Camacho comes out there and tries to test that jiu-jitsu of him, then you could see maybe a path where, you know, the full skills are on display. But Frank, even in his own record, he's been, you know, submitted and knocked out. And this is why, like, I would probably play the under if you're looking for a bet. Under 2.5 is probably pretty safe. But yeah, I'll be picking Manuel Torres despite my usual judgment of backing the guy who's the vet.
Yeah, no, I'm I guess where you're coming from there. Next up, we have got Jake Hadley taking on Alan Nascimento. Hadley 8,800, Nascimento 7,400 here. Hadley's UFC debut, missed weight on the Contender Series, but still got this opportunity. Big favorite here, undefeated fighter. What's your thoughts on here on the fighter making his UFC debut?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he brings pressure forward. I think that his hands are okay. I think that, you know, he throws kicks to the body as well. His strike is okay. Where he really dominates his opposition is when he's able to, you know, take the back of a lot of people and able to land a takedown and be the superior grappler in certain matchups. And this is a tricky fight because I do think that Alan Nascimento is better than what his record shows in the UFC. You know, he's 0-1 in the UFC, but also losing on Dana White's Contender Series to Holly and Paiva, where that seems like it was a war. Split decisions in both of his defeats. And I feel like this is a situation where I'm interested in the underdog. I know that Hadley has good ground control when he's in a, you know, obviously in a superior position. But I do think that the jiu-jitsu of Alan Nascimento can somewhat negate it as long as he's not comfortable off of his back losing minutes. If he's comfortable off of his back, then you can just book, you know, Hadley in there for a 30-27. But on the feet, I think that Nascimento is going to compete. The jiu-jitsu factor, he might be a better grappler than some of these fighters that Hadley has faced in the past. And I'm gonna get to some Nascimento at 7,400 just because of the unknown surrounding Hadley. And I like the fact that Nascimento has been a part of a strong camp, training with Charles Oliveira, you know, even Alan Patrick. Those guys down there, they're put together with some strong Muay Thai and sneaky jiu-jitsu, and they spar really, really hard, which is, I think, good in a way. And they do a lot of little glove sparring, which I think is even better. Doing a lot of little glove sparring and, you know, using the MMA gloves to really get used to, you know, striking and grappling and ground and pound. It really simulates a fight more so than big glove sparring. So I'm going to be backing Alan Nascimento, and it's a fight where I could see Hadley, if he gets in superior position, wins a decision. But I need to get to some underdog. So I'll be backing Nascimento here at 7,400.
Hadley is one of those fighters that is one of two fighters on this card that I'm really interested to see what they look like on the scale after he missed weight. The other one we'll talk about later on is Carlos Candelario after what happened the last time. But I understand why potentially want to get to the underdog there. Of course, we are sponsored by Prize Picks to get one free month of Also Plus Platinum when you sign up, deposit, and play over at Prize Picks. Of course, be sure to use that promo code AWESOMO for an instant first match deposit of up to $100. And there are two props that have stuck out to me on this one. First off, under the significant strikes category, Caitlin Chookagian, 65.5. And look, all you got to do, go to UFCstats.com. Just click on Caitlin Chookagian's name and then just go down the column of significant strikes. Nearly all of her fights, she lands more than 65 significant strikes outside of the fights that she's been stopped early in the fight. I mean, look, I think this fight's going to go 15 minutes. I love the over 65.5 there for Caitlin Chookagian.
Yeah, I can't blame you. I think that that's nice. Hopefully Hiwas's chin can hold up. But if she can hold up, then yeah, the over is there all day.
I got to go with the trends of history, man. With the trends of history.
Absolutely.
And then the other one that stuck out to me is the fight time on Davy Grant, 10 minutes. I don't think this thing's going to hit the third round. I like the under there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's an interesting spot. And Smolka is able to survive 15 minutes on the feet with Davy Grant, I'd be really surprised. So I would say the under as well.
Of course, be sure to check out our friends over there at Prize Picks, the sponsor of the AwesomeO.com MMA Strategy Show. Of course, get one free month of Also Plus Platinum when you sign up, deposit, and play over at Prize Picks. You'll get an email within 24 to 40 hours of how you can manage of that offer. Of course, be sure to use that promo code AwesomeO to get that instant first match deposit of up to $100. And I always say this on the show, when you see a prop on a Thursday you really like, you got to pounce on it. You got to pounce on it immediately, because there's a good chance those lines are going to change by the time we get to Saturday, when we're talking here live before lock on Saturday. Of course, myself and Pete will be here on Saturday to take any questions that you have when it comes to this UFC fight card. Let's move on to the next matchup. It's a female matchup between Viviana Araújo and Andrea Lee. Andrea Lee, 8,200, 8,000 for Araújo. Pete, what's your take?
Yeah, and I think we might disagree on this one, and it's fine, because the 8,200, 8,000 fight is always my kryptonite. You know that. Everybody listening out there knows that. But that's why I try to split exposure on the fight. And it means it's because it's a relatively close fight. You have Andrea Lee sitting at about -119 right now, and Araújo sitting at -103. So I'm interested in this bout because Andrea Lee has looked like the better fighter of late, right? Like, she really looks like she's evolved into a better mixed martial artist. The past performance was amazing, where against Cynthia Calvillo, she won by TKO in the second round. Prior to that, against Antonina Shevchenko, won in the second round via submission. Both of those times scored 103 and 115 fantasy points. That is like music to our ears at this price point. Viviana Araújo, on the other hand, just coming off a defeat to Caitlin Chookagian. And, you know, outside of her debut where she found the finish via KO, it's been going the distance. I feel like this is going to be a war back and forth, and it's going to come down to who's able to land more takedowns in the fight. I actually think and have a sneaking suspicion that Viviana Araújo might be the superior wrestler in this situation. She has attempted a lot throughout her fights, as Andrea Lee has as well. I just feel like she might be the stronger of the two. So she went 4-4 against Roxanne Modafferi, 2-7 against Jessica Ai, 2-2 against Alexis Davis, 3-3 against Talita Bernardo, 1-3 against Caitlin Chookagian. It's going to come down to who's able to scramble better. And give me 8,000 Viviana Araújo, where this could be a buy-low situation. Everybody's kind of backing the hot fighter in Andrea Lee, who looked amazing last time. So I'll be split, but I'm back in Araújo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm back in Andrea Lee in this one. I like what I've seen in her last two fights, two stoppage victories. We've seen the takedowns over her past couple of fights as well. She's always been kind of known as a high-volume fighter as well, so I want to get there. By the way, this isn't really related to UFC Vegas 54, but I just want to get your thoughts.
Uh-oh.
Jorge Masvidal's legal team filed a motion Thursday to evaluate Colby Covington's health as part of the battery case facing Masvidal Miami. Masvidal's team was also granted the ability to inspect the Rolex watch Covington claims was damaged in the alleged incident.
That's all circus. This whole thing's a circus.
It's MMA. I couldn't care less, bro.
I mean, it's such a circus. Go away.
Dude, I'm telling you this right now. If you told me that thing goes to trial and Colby has to take the stand, I would pay to sit in that courtroom.
I bet you he's a pretty good actor. I'm sure he could like have a quivering lip at times while he's saying the whole thing. So, man, I'm telling you, the thing's just a mess.
Oh man, I saw that. Because I was like, let me scroll through the timeline, make sure we haven't lost any fights. Because well, you know, that sometimes can happen. And I just saw that tweet, and I was like, oh my god, this is right. MMA soap opera at its best.
I hate it.
Oh, come on. You got to love it, bro. For
I
me,
hate
as
it.
A guy who hosts a MMA podcast, this is great stuff, man.
Yeah, see, not for me. I mean, I'm a purist. You know me. I'm a purist. So, like, I hate this stuff.
Look, anytime I mention Conor McGregor, I feel like it's good for an SEO.
Yeah, well, he's an idiot, too. But, I mean, these guys can't stay out of the headlines. So,
yeah, man, he's been all over headlines this week, man.
He's checked off more boxes than most people. So,
look, I'm just saying this. If Charles Oliveira gets offered Conor McGregor, he doesn't take that fight, he's an idiot.
He would take the fight, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course he would be.
And then Mystic Mac will come and knock him out in the back right. The notorious one. Don't you forget it, Jason.
I'm telling you right now, when Conor fights in Vegas, I feel like we should all go out there as a team and do a meetup.
I don't think that we could afford tickets, truthfully.
I can afford it.
Bro, they price things. Listen, when Connor's on the show, it's a completely different. By the time that we go and decide and we get answers from everybody that meet up, it would be sold out. It would just be sold out.
Yeah. No, it will be. I mean, like, you know, that is, you know how Connor is, man. He's going to sell that fight, you know, even though I think that the Chandler fight, I think, makes most sense for him next.
Agreed.
We always talk about the trust, do not trust list.
Oh, boy.
Do you trust Michael Johnson 8,400?
No, I don't. I don't trust either one of these guys, but this is probably going to make it into the optimal lineup. I mean, you got 8,400 Michael Johnson, 11-13 in the UFC, Alan Patrick, 5-3-1. I'm on Fantasy Cruncher right now, and when you pull up Michael Johnson, it's a whole lot of red, which means it's a whole lot of losses and underperforming stats. When I pull up Alan Patrick, he's been red in his past three fights, and it's such a volatile matchup. And I don't know how anybody can trust either one of these guys. And this is a parlay buster where you have the notable name in Michael Johnson, where you want to put him into your parlays, and you're like, oh, he's sitting at -150. You know, he should be able to do it. He's part of a strong camp. He throws great combinations. He's knocked out some of the best fighters within this division, and his amazing wins, you know, have definitely aged well, but his kryptonite and his Achilles heel is his, defensive wrestling. And that's a situation where I think Alan Patrick could have the correct game plan training with Charles Oliveira again. I'm just high on that camp right now. And until that camp proves me wrong, I'm going to back them. And I hate to say it, it's not a confident feeling because of how Alon Patrick could not continue in his previous performance. But 7,800 for a guy with grappling and wrestling upside. I mean, we've seen Michael Johnson get submitted in less, you know, against less opposition. So I'm going Alon Patrick.
Go back to the Thiago Moses fight. Michael Johnson looked great in the first round and then gets submitted 25 seconds into the second round.
Yep.
He's just a guy that, I mean, look, you love the striking ability of Michael Johnson. I mean, the guy's always had fast hands. I mean, you know, you think about this is, there's been fights where he's looked great early and then just couldn't finish the job. The Justin Gaethje fight is another example of that. I mean, let's not forget, it's been a while now, but he did knock out Dustin Poirier at 155 pounds. So, yeah. I mean, look, there's that dynamic there, but it very much is a high volatility fight. Samuel, appreciate you in the super chat. And that's an interesting over-under number. I know we only got 11 fights, so that's an interesting number. We'll talk about last week,
so I don't know. Sam might be on something. Like, Sam's over-under hit last week, which completely blew my mind when we had, 15 fights or something silly like that? It's just
I feel like I need to go over to last year to see what Sam's record is on the over-under number.
I mean, everybody's due for one. A broken clock's right twice a day, so, I love you, Sam. That I would have bet my life savings on last week's over-under number, and I would have lost. And Sam would have been rolling in that mansion, as he's talking about. So props to him. I mean, no, he's gotten so much better over the years. And it's been years now that he's been supporting us, so we appreciate you, buddy. And 4.5 for this card, I think it's accurate. I do think it's accurate. I'm saying over, but...
No, as I more start thinking about the fights, I feel really confident.
Yes.
I think there's 1, 2, 3, there's 4 fights I feel really confident are ending in stoppage.
Yeah, then Caitlin Chukagian is the one that's going to ruin it for you.
The four fights I feel confident, Span, Kutalaba, yeah. Camacho, Torres.
Okay.
Johnson, Patrick.
Okay.
And did I mention Grant Smolka?
Nope.
Grant Smolka. Those would be those 4 fights I think are going to envy.
Yeah, I think he's right on. I think he's really accurate right now. So I'm going to say more. And great question. And
yeah, we'll get to his other questions once we get through these final 3 fights. Next up, we got a female matchup. Jana Roba taking on Hill. Jana Roba, 8,500, 7,700 for Angela Hill. I just feel like, look, you might as well just place a Jana Roba or Hill wins via split decision just because Angela Hill seems to find herself in this. I mean, look, from a cash aspect, I don't mind getting Angela Hill on the spot. If she can keep this fight on the feet, she might be able to rack up enough points in a cash contest. My due concern is if Jana Roba can get this fight to the ground early and really rack up some points.
Yeah, so, I mean, a week like this, right, where I'm not in love with a lot of the underdogs, we could have a situation where one solid underdog comes through, and say it's like a Viviana Otto Ujo at 8,000, right? And then we have a losing fighter, a part of the optimal lineup. Well, you either want a losing fighter with takedown potential. So let's say like an Alon Patrick scores 7 takedowns or something before he gets flatlined by Michael Johnson, because I could see that being such a volatile fight. Or we could have a situation where Angela Hill, even in a loss, scores well because she's done it in the past. So she's going to be a very popular underdog. It's women's MMA. And, sometimes underdogs tend to cash in situations like this. So I don't blame anybody, because on the feet, I do like her volume. She throws a ton of volume, just no power. And when people are able to walk through your punches and engage in a clinch with you, that's a difficult skill set to have when you don't have the best ground game. So even in losses, listen to this, 42 against Lemos, 52 against Tisha Torres, 59 against, that was a 5-round, 47 against Claudia Gadelha. So there's potential of a losing fighter here in Angela Hill, or it being a closely contested bout and she gets the nod. So I'm still siding with Verna Jana Roba. Her skill set, her grappling is just so much more superior than Angela Hill's grappling. And I don't think that her striking's all that bad. It's bad, but it's not all that bad. It's improved. So I'm going to be picking Jana Roba here at 8,500.
Of course, one of the things that Pete and I love to see after fights are over is winning screenshots. when I was checking my DK lineup, saw an Awesome user took down the Haymaker contest.
Yeah.
Also, an Awesome user was in our Discord chat, took down the FanDuel contest. Always love to see those winning screenshots. We want to see you go into the Awesome Hall of Fame. Of course, you got to be rocking that Awesome avatar on your DFS profile. You get that over awesomeo.com/avatar. Tweet your wins to at @awesomeHOF. And when you finish, you place in the top three of a contest with over 5,000 contestants, you'll win a free month of Awesome Plus Platinum. Only one free month can be awarded to a user per calendar year. Congratulations, Sean, taking down the first place there in the MLB contest over there in DraftKings, taking out 100K. Also, congratulations to Jordan, taking that first place in an NBA contest, walking away with $37,000. Kudos to you, Jordan. Also, Mikey taking out first place in the NASCAR contest over there on DraftKings, taking down $20,000. Yeah, Kyle Larson actually screwed me last week. Thank you, Kyle. You've been really a disappointment this year. Also, kudos to Ben there, taking out first place in a single entry over there on DraftKings, winning $1,500. Also, Jacob getting his first big win. Kudos to you over there, taking over $2,400 there in the NBA contest. Of course, we'd love to see you go into the Awesome Hall of Fame over this weekend. Get to another super chat from Sam. He says, favorite fights to stack due to being 11 fights. Ooh, that's an interesting. Sammy, I'll tell you, I'm still, when it comes to stacking, I really want it to be less than 10 fights. But I could see where in a situation like this, I could see where your thought process is. You know, to me, you know, if I'm looking at stacking a fight, I mean, man, I mean, I hate to say it, you probably look at the main event because I think it's going to go 25 minutes. If you were, I would personally, Samuel, I would not go there. But if you were, I think I would be looking at the main event.
Yeah, I mean, to stack, you are limiting your upside. But on a card like this, it's definitely possible that stacking is going to make it into the optimal lineup. Now, you want high volume or five rounds. So I think the five round, the main event makes sense, as you mentioned. I also think if somebody's so, so cheap that even in, if they can have some success for like a round and a half, then they're in an interesting spot. Now, that's a fight we haven't talked about yet, but Petrusky has takedown upside with him. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that he's going to be able to scramble as well as Maximov. And I think Maximov's going to be able to land takedowns like crazy on him en route to a possible submission. So at 6,900, that could be a situation. But I mean, I would say the easy answer is the main event.
Yeah. We got two more fights here left to break down. You got Tejada taking on Candelario. Of course, this fight was supposed to take place a couple of weeks ago. However, Candelario comes down with an illness on fight day, so the fight does not happen. 7,200 for him. Tejada, 9,000. We broke this one down before. I mean, I don't think really much has changed. I do want to see what Carlos looks like on the scale, see if we see any noticeable with him. You know, obviously, Tejada, 22-year-old fighter, very young. Green fighter obviously has that submission ability. If you're Candelario, I think the goal is to keep this one on the ground. I don't mind taking some stabs at Candelario, but I definitely see the grappling upside in Tara here.
Yeah, so I mean, Candelario is going to want to keep this on the feet for sure. He can land takedowns, but I don't suggest doing that. He's a competent grappler, but he gets controlled a lot, and he could get put in bad positions where his opponents can backpack him for a little bit. And that's really what I think could happen here against Tetsu or Tyra. He's a back taker. He's pretty good at it. Lands takedowns, hunts for the neck a lot. We have seen Candelario get tested in that situation. And even on the regional scene, he's fought some fighters that have tried to implement a similar game plan. So I think that for a flyweight bout, this could have a ton of control time. And usually it's not like that because you have the fighters working back to their feet. I'm going to be favoring Tetsu or Tyra because on the feet, I'm giving the edge to Carlos slightly. He's a superior striker for sure, but Tetsuya Taira does enough on the feet to make you respect his striking, and then that's when he starts to really engage in takedown. So I'm going to say Tetsuya Taira will work his way to a decision victory here, but there is takedown and submission finish potential. So I do think that Candelaria would be tough enough to survive, but at 9,000, you have to be aware. So I'm picking Taira to win the bout.
Yeah, and then, of course, the final matchup, you got Nick Maximov, one of the biggest favorites on this card, taking on Andrei Petrosky. 9,300 for Maximov, 6,900 for Petrosky. You kind of teed it up there a second ago. I mean, look, I think when I've known Nick Maximov for a couple of years now, I mean, you know, when I think of Nick Maximov, I think of submission grappling. I mean, that's just what I think of. I think if you're Petrovsky, you know, if I'm in his team, I'm sitting there going, we want to test the stand-up ability of Nick Maximoff. You just don't want to make this into a grappling matchup because then you're going into Nick's world.
Yeah, I agree. And I just don't think that Petrovsky has the pace to keep up with Maximoff, no matter where this is, because his cardio is not the best. It kind of falls off a cliff. He likes to be the hammer, not the nail, as a lot of fighters do. But, you know, he will shoot, you know, takedowns from a far distance out, where I see fighters that they could sprawl and take advantage of a situation like that. If he does try to take down Nick Maximoff, that's going to be a bad situation, because I think Maximoff will spin right behind him, take his back, and either control the round or look to choke him out. Petrovsky on the feet should have the power advantage, but Maximoff knows what his skill set is. He's going to do just enough, and then he's going to make you scramble and defend takedown. So this is a nice situation for Nick Maximoff. An upset of keeping it on the feet and using your, you know, Chuck Liddell type of wrestling skills of takedown defense for Petrovsky is how he should win this fight, or how he needs to try to fight. But I don't think that he's going to be able to survive Maximoff's chain wrestling. The chain wrestling's great, and I think the cardio is going to abandon Petrovsky, and we've seen him get submitted via ninja choke on the Ultimate Fighter. So give me Nick Maximoff here at 9,300. You go from being in the co-main event to now first fight of the night. It's quite amazing. And I'll tell you what, that win over Punahela Soriano is a fighter that I thought is pretty damn talented. So I'm picking Maximoff pretty heavily.
Yeah, of course. So let's get into our straight up picks here. Non-DFS related main event. I will go Alexander Rakic.
Yeah, same. Rakic.
I will go to Kutalaba in the co-main event.
Kutalaba.
Give me Davey Grant.
Davey Grant.
Kevin Chukagian.
Chukagian.
I think we're going to differ here. Give me my guy, Frank the Tank.
Okay, I'm going Manuel Torres.
I would go Jack Hadley, but concerned about potentially missing weight.
Okay, I'm going Nascimento.
I would go Andrea Lee.
Araujo.
Man, we're really different this week. I hate to say it.
We both lose in this situation.
Give me Michael Johnson.
And give me Alon Patrick. I mean, it's such a terrible fight.
You just don't trust either one of them.
No, definitely not.
Problem. I would go Werner Janaroba against Angela Hill.
Janaroba.
I'll give Tatsuro Tahara against Candelario.
Yep, Tatsuro.
And then I'll go Maximoff against Petrovsky.
Maximoff.
All right, so over under 4.5 with Samuel.
I think it's
I'm gonna say you know what, Samuel? It's a good number. I think it's a good number, but I still gotta go the over.
Yeah, I'm going more.
Top two cash. To me, I start off with Davey Grant, and then to label a second one. I just don't know if she'll score enough, but I would go Caitlin Chukagian.
Yeah, I'm going Caitlin Chukagian for cash. I'm going Maximoff.
Top two GPPs for me. I will go Kutalaba as one of them. And the other one, I'll go Davey Grant.
Yeah, Kutalaba is a good one. I will say that... That's a really good one. That's a good pair. Kutalaba and Grant. I'm going to say Kutalaba and Maximoff. Obviously, two high-end options, but I do think that for GPPs, it makes a ton of sense.
In terms of favorite underdogs in here, I mean, look, when you look at my straight-up picks, I don't have a ton of underdogs. I mean, Frank Camacho is one of the rare ones, but I mean, there's some underdogs here that I definitely want to take some chances on. Mm-hmm. You know, in a cash lineup, I would take chances on Angela Hill. I don't think I'd get there in GPPs. I want a splash of Ryan Spann. Mm-hmm. Manuel Torres is, even though he's not the underdog there. Those are the kind of ones that the underdogs I would be really looking at. And I think I'd throw Blachowicz in there too.
Yeah, I mean, the Blachowicz one makes sense, right? I mean, you're getting plus money on a former champ. Everybody's going to target that. And that's probably why he's going to be the most popular underdog on the slate. Understand that when you're making lineups. As far as ceiling, I think that Alan Patrick has tons of takedown potential, even with submission potential because of Michael Johnson's history. So I will say Alan Patrick, and it pains me to say that because I'm a big Michael Johnson guy.
Of course, be sure to hit that thumbs up button. Subscribe also right here on YouTube. If you're not currently subscribed, hit that notification bell so you know when the show is live here on the channel. Of course, come up here later on today here in 2 hours. Will be MLB live before lock. Favorite inside the distance. To me, the fight Samuel that I'm looking at is Span, Kutalaba, Grant, Smolka, Camacho, Torres. and Johnson and Patrick.
Yeah, inside the distance for me, I like Davey Grant. I do. I like Davey Grant and I like Kudalaba.
Yeah. Top leverage plays. I mean, look, Chookagian, just because of her history, will probably be a good leverage play.
It's my girl, Chookagian. That's the answer.
Top dart plays.
The dart throw would have to mean that we really, even in a loss, right? That's where, I think, oh man, it's so ugly down there. Is it Candelario if he keeps it on the feet? You know, is it? It could very well be.
I was saying Candelario or Span, just yeah, because of the ceiling of Span. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a boom bust type play, but you know, if he goes out there and he can get that first round victory that we've seen him do, I mean, that's where I'd probably look at Span as a dart play.
It's fair.
Top optimal plays. To me, I think you really got to look at who has the takedown upsides. You mentioned Alan Patrick. I think Ian Kutalaba is another one.
Yeah, I would agree. I like my girl Viviana Araújo. We differ on that fight, but it's a price point that I'm always attracted to.
Let's see here. We get a couple other questions in here. Marco, Rick says, he goes, are they spitting Maximov because of the UFC issues with Nate Diaz? No. I also tell you that Maximov is not represented by the same management as the Diaz brothers.
Yeah, I mean,
he's represented by first round management.
It is odd, though, going from co-main to first fight of the night.
Well, it's just some fights, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Apex cards. You know, it's not like he was a co-main event in a card that they had to put 10,000 people in the building for.
I know, but there's plenty of other fights on this card that could be the first fight of the night. I don't know.
I think part of that goes into is how they see the fight going.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a
quick win for Maximov. Like, there's certain fights you look at a card and you say, that's the type of fight we want on the main card because we just feel like high probability that fight's going to deliver. Maximov Petrosky could be a not very exciting fight.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
You know, because, I mean, look, and you know this, you know, grappling, you know, I mean, while I enjoy watching some good grappling, there's a lot of people who could care less about it.
Very true. A lot of people do not, they'll turn the channel, they'll go get a beer, they'll do whatever. But I don't know. I think a guy that hunts for a finish with grappling is somebody that's going to excite anybody. But kind of that wall install or just blanket their opponents is definitely something that's not fan friendly.
By the way, question asked if we like the under 10 minutes on Davey Grant on Prize Picks. That answer is yes. That's actually one of the plays that really sticks out to me. Samuel says, is he getting punished for saying he is a main card type fighter? I think it's more about the fact of the fighting ability and the fact of the UFC would rather have strikers on that main card than grapplers.
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, as Manish said, you know, in that card where he was the co-main event, a lot of fights fell out. So I'm just saying he's not a first fight of the night. Like, it doesn't represent his skill set. He's much better than that. So
I will say this. I was, when I first started doing my deep dive on this card, I was surprised when we had 11 fights. I was
These cards are weird because it tends to be Chalk City and it tends to be Split City as well. So like you'll see, you know, 200 people take down the, you know, the contest with the same exact lineup. So if you're trying to avoid that, leave salary on the table.
Of course, you got Bellator tomorrow afternoon. Both Pete and I, we do like that underdog value on Michael Page.
I love it. I need Michael Page to come through for me, bro. I need him to come through for me because planted my flag on Michael Page this week. And I really hope, I mean, like we talked about it, Storley really has to put together the perfect game plan for 25 minutes without getting caught. Can he do it? I don't know. I don't think so.
Interesting. So yesterday did the virtual media day for that one. And yeah. Michael Page was asked about the differences from going from Amosov to going to Storley, where he said, he goes, it's actually been an easier preparations for him because Storley has more of a generic type of MMA grappling as opposed to Amosov just being different. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Samuel, this card is inside the Apex. So you do got the smaller 25-foot cage. It's always something to take into effect there.
Advantage grapplers.
Typically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, man, there is not much room to run around when you're trying to get away from that grappler.
Nope.
Is 2,000 plus salary left a great approach? It's a great approach if you want to be different, Samuel. Full disclosure, I have not even started to build lineups yet.
Yeah.
That'll usually be about tomorrow morning is when I start building lines. But, you know, leaving that amount of money on the table, Samuel, is a great way to differentiate yourself.
Yeah, it's a good way to get unique. If you hate chopping, then go ahead and leave tons of salary on the table. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have the correct lineups, but it just gives you a chance of taking down a tournament by your lonesome. Sometimes chopping's better than losing. So,
dude, last week the guy won the DK contest and the FanDuel contest. It wasn't a chop. They had the only one lineup.
Crazy.
That's usually that's a rarity. That's a rarity.
Very hard. Yeah.
Well, when you lose a fight after the fight's already started, I mean, like, come on, DK, can we get a little weight swap, please?
Yeah, we need. I mean, or how about not even like DraftKings? How about the UFC waiting? Like, you think that they just found out that news after the first fight of the night? Come on.
This is my guess. Cerrone started to work out, and he realized he couldn't perform. That'd be my guess.
Well, let's wait till after the first fight when everybody's lineups are locked. Well, and then we're going to announce. Like,
Pete, I don't think the UFC cares.
No, they don't care at all. I know. I'm just saying. It sucked. It sucked for the view. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's a tilting experience, and it makes a lot of people not enjoy this when half their lineups are done. So it shouldn't be like that.
Rick, I'll end on this. I did see a portion of the Pat Barry interview. Obviously, I think probably the big takeaway for me was effective. He said it was actually the first time that Rose actually stuck to a game plan. Saying that, got a lot of questions on why that was the game plan. The best way I put it.
Yeah. Such a stupid. I don't even want to talk about that fight. It's so dumb.
I mean, look, man, it's one of those things. I went back and I watched the fight a second time. I know. Apparently I torture myself here.
You watched it two times.
I watched it two times. Yes.
Get the hell out of here. Talk two times. Let me tell you why I'm so pissed off about that. And I'm going to say this real quick, because we were at the sports book and we had this one guy in front of us who is convinced that, you know, he's all about like the conspiracy theories and whatnot and how Carla and her made a deal that she wasn't going to get beat up before her wedding and this and that. So he backed Carla like extremely heavily. The second that they read out those scorecards, he stood on top of the table and he started screaming at everybody, pointing fingers, swearing at us about how we were all chalk donkeys going after Rose Namajunas, and that this was a clear indication that it was corrupt and whatnot. He was standing on that table, Jason, and trust me, I had some nice little techniques I wanted to do to him while he was up there. A little
front kick to the face,
little step behind side kick right off that table would have been beautiful. So yeah, I'm gonna constantly hate that experience and hate Carla Esparza every day going forward.
Manish, by the way, Pete and I had this conversation earlier this week. Why was Cowboy at a taco place the night before a fight?
It's a great question. That is a great question.
Yeah, I feel like we're at the home arena of Pete the Heat. I don't think I feel like, you know, because when I'm there, you know, I got a certain spot I love to go to.
Yeah.
You know, I Hash House to go. I just don't feel like, Pete, you're going to join me the night before the fight.
No. I said it last week that, you know, you stick to your diet and your regimen until the fight's over. So, yeah. I mean, who knows? What a disaster. When that came out, I couldn't believe it. I was like, will it work in our favor for once? Maybe like it would have been somebody I was light on. No, it's the fight that I was most heavily on. So whatever. We all enjoy pain apparently. So
this week
we'll have to rebound and get some good bounces.
Of course, we'll be back here on Saturday for Live Before Lock. Of course, coming up here in just under 2 hours from now, you got MLB Live Before Lock to get you ready for tonight's late baseball slate. So that's going to do it for this edition of the AllSwim.com MMA Strategy Show. We will talk to you on Saturday for Live Before Lock. Have a good day, everybody.